Good morning, Greg Hughes here. Thank you very much for listening to this repeat of the 9 till noon show. Don't forget, you can still get involved in the conversation. Text or WhatsApp 086 6020 5000 or email comments@highlandradio.com.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, very good morning to you. It is 4 minutes past nine on this Monday, the 23rd of January. Very welcome along to the 9 till noon show. Our lines are open for you right now if you get involved in the conversation. 086 6020 5000, 086 6020 5000. Your WhatsApps and text numbers to that call, or give us a call on 07491 25000. And a reminder for you that you can also watch the programme. Go on to our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, on your phone, your tablet, or your smart TV. Same applies to Facebook, Facebook Watch, or the Facebook app on any of those devices. And you can watch on our browser as well at highlandradio.com. Your emails come in to us, comments@highlandradio.com. Okay, let's kick off the show with a look at the front of the newspapers this morning. Let's start with the Derry News. Stark systemic underfunding of education. Concerns regarding the stark systemic underfunding of education in the north of Ireland have been highlighted by the chief executives of the main education bodies here. In an open letter to the British Secretary of State, Chris Heaton-Harris, and the head of the civil service, Jane Brady, the seven chief executives cited evidence provided by the Institute of Fiscal Studies. Their letter said the Institute for Fiscal Studies has clearly highlighted this stark systemic underfunding of our education system. Their analysis evidences that since 2019-2010, spending per pupil has been consistently highest in Scotland and generally lowest in Northern Ireland. Much more on that story on the inside of that paper. The Irish Independent this morning, children under mental health treatment lost in the HSE system. A worrying story here across many papers. Many children with mental health difficulties were effectively forgotten by the HSE and left on medication for years without follow-up appointments or monitoring. And this does sort of align with some of the calls and contacts we get into this programme. The damning findings are made in an interim report by the Inspector of Mental Health Services on COVID and Adolescent Mental Health Services, that's CAMHS. Dr Susan Finnerty began examining CAMHS in the country's nine HSE Community Health Organisation areas in the wake of the scandal at Child Mental Health Services in South Kerry, the extent of which was revealed in the Irish Independent a year ago. She expressed serious concern that young people with open cases have been left lost to follow up by some CAMHS teams around the country. In one CAMHS team, she found there were 140 lost cases, as they're described. Another team did not follow up its patients for up to 2 years, despite these children being on continuing medication. Unacceptable variations were found between CAMHS services, meaning children faced a postcode lottery in terms of care. Solicitor Keith Rowles, whose firm Coleman Legal represents dozens of children and families who received substandard care in County Kerry, said Dr Finity's report was a damning indictment of CAMHS services nationwide. The HSE is committed to a review of cases within the CAMHS service that remains open. More on that. Two more pages inside that paper. It's also on the front of the Irish Times, but we'll focus on a political story here. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar and Tánaiste Micheál Martin have both expressed confidence in Minister for Public Expenditure Pascal Donoghue as the controversy continues over his election expenses. Both party leaders spoke to Mr Donoghue over the weekend ahead of the Fresh Dáil statement and a questions and answers session with the opposition tomorrow aimed at drawing a line under the matter. Mr Donoghue's expected to offer new details of an issue relating to the 2020 election. However, he did not publicly offer any new details on his election expenses over the weekend. He was expected to. A spokesperson said the minister takes all issues under consideration seriously and will deal with matters in the House on Tuesday. Mr Varadkar spoke to his Fine Gael colleagues on Saturday and said last night, "I believe him and I'm satisfied with his explanation. I have full confidence in him." But I say that'll all play out in the Dáil tomorrow evening, and opposition parties and the representatives will be able to question him, and we'll see what he has to say in those matters. The Irish Daily Mail tells us another health service crisis is looming over the lack of home help supports for hospital patients ready to be discharged. I wouldn't say this is looming. I understand the newspaper's approach to it. I would say we're living this, and we have been living it, and we've highlighted this on this programme as one of the key issues in terms of overcrowding. You know, I think on one morning when we spoke to Sean Murphy, there were 25 people awaiting discharge. They were fit enough to be discharged, 35 waiting on beds. So clearly you could see at least part of the problem there was going to be these people who are not sick enough to be in an acute hospital but might need some step-down care or further care, probably not available to them. That's not what Mr. Murphy said, to be clear, but that's obviously implied. The service is short of millions of hours in support for patients at home, and the HSE's in talks with the health department over extra funding for the vital service. Doctors are often reluctant to discharge vulnerable patients unless proper home help support is in place. If those patients who are often unfairly discharged as are often unfairly disparaged as so-called bed blockers, and thankfully I haven't heard that term in a while, are not sent home despite not needing acute medical care. They keep a hospital place that could be used for a worse-off patient. But again, this has been when that overcrowding crisis was upon us. It's never away. But, you know, when it was really, really serious, we spoke to a lot of experts to try and come up with solutions. You know, what we know what the problem is. It's terrible. And we know the stories, and we still continue to invite them and listen to them. But we also wanted to talk about, well, how do we fix this? And that was identified by various experts as a key element of fixing the problems. Terribly sad story over the weekend out of Cork. And this is covered in all papers. I've picked out the Daily Star here. Gardaí is set to launch a murder investigation after an 89-year-old patient was allegedly beaten to death in a Cork hospital. Matthew Healy, a retired farmer from Berings, was discovered dead in a ward at Mercy University Hospital in Cork in the early hours of yesterday morning. Gardaí suspect he was beaten to death by another patient who was in the hospital. A suspect in his 30s was arrested by Gardaí, who were alerted to the scene at around 5:30 a.m. Mr. Healy, a father of four, had only recently lost his wife Delia, who died on January 2nd. It's understood that officers do not believe there was any prior connection between the victim and the attacker, and that no motive has been established for the attack. And Gardaí are understood to be awaiting the results of a post-mortem examination, but are set to launch a murder probe over Mr. Healy's shocking death. I understand a medical member of the medical staff was also injured in that. But what an awful case. And God rest Matthew Healy. On to the Sun now. How's about a retrofit loan? Homeowners will soon be able to borrow up to €50,000 to retrofit their property. And the state-backed loan scheme will be funded by low interest rates. We can reveal that being the paper. Environment Minister Eamon Ryan today rolls out exclusive details of the loan scheme that will be available for retrofits on top of the grants already in place. He told the Irish Sun the loan accounts to the typical range. If someone is doing up the house top to bottom, it depends on the house, but you're talking 30, 40 or 50,000 euro. That's getting up to a B standard. The B standard plus is a different house. It's healthier. It's cheaper to run. It's better value. How keen would you be if you were able to access a state-backed low-interest loan? Would that be really the difference between you retrofitting your home and not retrofitting it? Extra lending. I'm not sure if everyone would like to take that on or how many might want to take that on. But I suppose if it is a pathway to a warmer, more environmentally friendly home. The house is worth more, so it is a loan that pays itself back very handily. That's, of course, if you sell the home. It's for those who don't have that, like most of us, don't have that 30 or 40 grand to hand. The loan scheme will be run through banks and credit unions and is being backed up by funding from Europe, which has led to delays. Okay, that's Minister Ryan's announcement today. What do you think about that? 086 60 25,000. Another shocking shooting incident coming out of the United States. It's covered in most of the papers. We'll focus here on the Irish Daily Mirror. A suspect thought to have massacred 10 people in a dance club was last night believed to have shot himself during a police standoff, and that's been confirmed this morning. A gunman fled the scene after killing five men and five women at a ballroom club on Saturday night during Lunar New Year celebrations, police said. 10 others were injured in the shooting spree in Monterey Park, California, hours after the killing. SWAT teams in nearby Torrance boxed in a white van. They had been hunting. An officer ordered the occupant to exit the vehicle. They heard a shot and soon after reported finding a body. Describing the scene when they arrived, Captain Andrew Mayer of the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department said people were pouring out of the location screaming at 10:30 p.m. Now, that fellow has been identified, the fellow responsible who took his own life, as a 72-year-old person. And he also, according to reports this morning, attempted to enter a club armed as well. We can only presume his motives, but two people wrestled him to the ground. So any further loss of life was avoided in that process. All right, that was a run through some of the papers and some of the news making the headlines today. As I say, if you want to comment on any of that, make sure you stay involved in the conversation here. We've plenty coming up for you. 08660 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number. You can give us a call too on 07491 25000. All right, now let's look back at a protest which took place at Letterkenny University Hospital on Saturday at lunchtime. We had spoken to Mary T. Sweeney, chairperson of the Letterkenny Hospital campaign, a couple of times ahead of it. And Mary T.'s back with us on the programme. Thanks very much for joining us today. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me back on.
Your assessment of the protest at the weekend, a couple of hundred people turned out, I think, really, with the ice that still was lying in some places on Saturday morning. I don't think it's a terrible crowd. Is it below or above your expectations, or is that not what's really important to you in this process, Mary T?
What did you say, 200 or 300?
I don't know, 200 or 300?
It was definitely 300 yeah. people there. And the people that I had invited everybody to give me their names and numbers to sign up to, so we can get a really widespread committee formed from across the county to give a fair representation. I can't believe people from Mallon Head, Manor Cunningham, you know, Trenta, Drumkeen, Balbuffet, Lifford, obviously Letterkenny through it, Balbuffet, Castledoe, wherever Castledoe is, Creasla, Buncrana, Termon, Donegal Town, Remelton. We really have to thank the people that travelled in what was sort of dubious, unknown circumstances. And there are three people, if you allow me to thank them, the Sweeney family in Trenta Boy for the lorry, and the Paddy O'Brien for coming in and gritting. The ice was a sheet of ice when we landed that morning, and it was quite concerning. And the people, many thought it was at the front gates of the hospital, but we were actually up at the bus bay at the back, so we couldn't avoid, or we avoided any disruption to traffic entering or leaving the hospital. So a lot of people had parked below and had to walk up, which was a steep climb in slippy conditions. Thank you to everybody that came.
And it was the first of I presume of many to come, and it was a passionate crowd that realised that, well, they probably feel enough is enough, and that this is the type of action that's required to effect change.
I have to say that, the stories that people were trying to tell me afterwards, I wasn't prepared for that. And even just the passion they had for having came that morning. Many people have since contacted me to say that they hadn't realised it was on. And can I apologise to any of the media outlets that have put up comments that that we didn't advertise with them? That will never happen again, because that was ignorance on our part that we didn't go through the list of everybody that, you know, advertises. So apologies to anybody that don't feel left out. It won't happen again. And the reality is that networking, people have a willingness for change. Our politicians were there. Now, I invited all 37 of the county councillors, but I know I recognise all the local Letterkenny faces, and some of them chose to speak, some of them didn't choose to speak on the day, but they were all equally invited to speak, and it was as open and as fair as many of the people that have very personal stories. I found were reticent or nervous to speak, and several of them gave me permission to speak.
Yeah, I think most of us would probably feel like that. You know, it's difficult to stand up in front of people. Yeah, it really is. Yeah, and it's not for everyone. And the important element to this as well too is, I think, that it was standing with and amongst workers within the health service as well. Do you know what I mean? I think that message needs to be clear, and it was made clear. I'm not making it on your behalf, though, that this was people standing in solidarity with people working in very tough conditions.
I thought it was quite emotional for me, seeing people walking up, coming out of the hospital, walking up for their dinner hour and leaving again promptly at 10 to 2 to get back down again, you know. And can I just say, for Betty Holmes as well to come and speak, I was really honoured that she made such an effort on such a cold day, you know. And she spoke so eloquently as well, as did all the speakers. But a big thank you to Betty there for coming out. It was great, vast experience over 18 years.
And I saw her holding her map, which for some people just says it all, really. You know, it's very, very descriptive. So what's next then, Mary? Is there momentum? Is this the start of something or what?
Well, I had forgotten about Betty's map, which I shouldn't have, because I did attend many of her protests. But I had also brought a map with me showing for the new minor injury clinics in Ireland. Mm. They may come as far as Monaghan. There's 11 of them throughout Ireland, which are a fantastic asset for minor injuries and children above 5 years, that you can go and you don't have to have a GP letter. And the fee is unfortunately €75 at present, which is much too expensive. It should be brought down to a minimum fee, or at least a GP-related fee, that you can go directly if you have a break, or if you have the football kids or the basketball, you know, children that have the breaks and the twists and the sprains and all of those people, or respiratory, what I've been crying from the start. You know, we should have more of these respiratory clinics around the county in the facilities that we have attached to our NOWDOC. And Councillor Michael McClafferty spoke about the concerns about the NOWDOC, which is now also under threat. Mm. And that perhaps, you know, we have
some of the, obviously the suggestions you're making there are incredibly valid as well. But we've also heard from people within the hospital speaking out about the problems that are there, that this is about, there is money there for staff. But they can't recruit the staff. Now, I suppose if anyone Googles the hospital, it's not a fantastic advert either, you know, in terms of recruitment. But we've also heard from hospital management to say that, you know, they have people that they've gotten better, but they can't get them discharged. That, you know, on any given day, there could be 20, 30 people that need step-down care or need a bed in the community, and that simply is not there. And then, of course, you know, how the hospital is run itself in terms of certain elements of it being 5 day. So an awful lot of the... we do know how to fix an awful lot of this. It's just a case of it being implemented or someone taking the bull by the horns. I don't...
Well, I could be objective about it because I'm not attached to the hospital and I'm not internal, and I'm a neutral ear to listen. And the feedback I have gotten for years has been that we need to, number one, listen to the staff. And I mean on all tiers. There should be an open forum that they can put in recommendations in their areas. We need to start taking the people in control in middle management, and we need to review what they're doing and how they're implementing concerns that are raised. We need to look at senior management and see how can this be improved. As I said at the meeting, if management is working effectively on all tiers, then there are no problems, or problems are addressed immediately. When you talk about budgeting, $21 billion in the health service, Greg. Like NASA's on 24 billion. Mm.
We have it might actually be 23. I'm not looking to contradict you, but I think it's actually 23, isn't it? Is it?
Right. Well, no, they did get a huge boost.
Yeah.
I look at 2021 figures, maybe 2022 figures.
But to your point anyway, as it relates to NASA, yeah.
My point is we need to look at, and it's no personal reflection on Stephen Donnelly, but we need to look at the concept that we have one person, a Minister for Health, in charge of this budget. And we've got to look at the background, the qualifications, and how successful that has been over the years. Can we look back and say this Minister for Health was excellent, that Minister for Health was excellent, and it's just today that there's a problem? And I don't think we can.
No, the problems are historic, indeed. But all parties have sort of got their fingerprints on the slant of care, that new plan, its implementation. Many within health don't really think it's the solution that others think. You know, I mean, there is do you think it's fair to say there is a consensus across politics as to where the health service needs to go?
I think the whole structure of the health service, and I hate when they start. Like, would you put one man in charge of the budget for NASA? Like, it's three times what... Would you ask Minister Donnelly to run Ryanair? Run Highland Radio? You know, at the moment, would you have confidence that they could come in and run Highland? You know, when the system's broken and not working, it's not working. So you cannot keep throwing money at it, which is what they've been doing. You know, listen to what the clinicians on the ground are saying, what the staff on the ground are saying, and we need additional resources put into Donegal, which is a vast county, and it doesn't mean it has to be the same modus operandi as Dublin. Listen to Donegal and see what we need up here. You know, listen to the people that are having to travel an hour and a half to get into hospital, and some of them maybe don't have a car, and we don't have a bus service. I could go on and on. Is there a reason that the minor injury clinics don't come beyond Monaghan? Betty made a very valid point. There's nothing above the middle line.
Mm.
You know, so we need to start asking hard questions and saying to our politicians, politics is not working with the health board. We need to look at external consultants to come in and to make, or previously experienced people. There are people that I have known that worked in the system in Donegal that I find that had an excellent expert contribution,
mm-hmm.
that could be maybe be you know, I would personally think that a local consultancy established would be a very direct way to immediately alleviate problems and help restructure what's going on.
A caller says, travelled from Inishowen on Saturday, very disappointing crowd, so there's only 300 people in this county affected by this crisis in LUH. Come on, folks, get behind this campaign. I say, I don't know where everyone else was, but say, for instance, from my perspective, where I was, the road onto the main road was still incredibly, incredibly slippy. I think, say, for instance, also using me as an example, I think I'm kind of typical. I couldn't have brought a toddler with me. You know, I couldn't physically have gotten there if I had, you know, if I'd wanted to. And of course, I support anything that improves things for the people. So I don't know what a good figure or bad figure would be, but I think all things told, and maybe beforehand, despite your best efforts, people might have thought it was an aim to protest, and maybe now that that has been dispelled to some extent, Mary T, do you know what I mean? I'm just trying to help here. You know what I mean? I think for the next one, the crowd might be bigger. I'd expect it to be bigger.
I would think that my reputation out there, okay, I'm involved with the interview, yes, and it was an initiative that came in through me that started the ball rolling in this area locally. If people are going to say that they don't support a campaign that's so important because of my affiliation to Aintu, I think that's wrong, Greg.
I know,
because
but it's understandable
whoever,
as well.
Whoever accepted everything that Sinn Féin did, or that Fianna Fáil did, that the local ministers did here, or that Fine Gael did? You know, let's talk sense.
No, I understand that. I think it's clear, though, you were organising, you were leading this as an individual. But the elephant in the room is that we've seen public demonstrations that have been organised by political parties, even though they're apolitical. And even in the capital, not here locally, and the turnout's not been great. But you get one that's organised by the people and the turnout's huge. It's just a fact of life. But as I say, I'm not being negative here. I'm just saying that because there was a cross-party turnout and you had the likes of the backing of Betty Holmes and others, that the next time I think people will see that it's not, you know, a politically affiliated protest. I'm only being constructive here. It really isn't negative, but I do have a little bit of understanding of how these, you know, I speak to people and they go, oh, well, I can't go to that because I'm a such and such, and I'd be standing at a such and such a person's protest. You know what I mean? But it's just a fact of life, I think. But I've been wrong many times.
I'm extremely delighted. And I think if you speak to the councillors, when I called a meeting as an Aintu representative about the crisis with the Old Town Bridge, which is significantly under pressure at the moment and all blocked in the eyes, I have to respect every single representative from Letterkenny came to that meeting in the Station House Hotel. So I think you're unfounded in your concerns about my representation. And when I looked down and I could see Kieran Brogan, and I don't want to leave anybody.
No,
out
I
here.
Get you, but I think you might be slightly misinterpreting what I'm trying to say here. But anyway, listen, that's fine. I fully respect your view. That's not what I was saying. It wasn't questioning you for a second. But anyway, a caller wants to know, did any staff unions sort of say, right, there's a protest, get out and support it if you can?
I had two apologies from the unions. There were significant apologies for Thomas Pringle, the TD, had a family commitment. I had a number of apologies from individuals that couldn't make it, and the two unions, we wrote to every union that we could find an address for. We phoned the hospital and asked for internal union references, and we had difficulties in getting them there. Remember, this was all organised within 10, 11 days. That's how quickly this happened. So when you take a time frame, and the weather, it was a phenomenal turnout. When you look at 11,000 on the streets of Limerick, they have two A&Es already closed down there. They have at least three people where there's deaths attributed to the overcrowding and the, you know, we need to get it in place now before we're looking at that sort of reality up here, if it's not already a case, because the estimates that there's over 300 deaths attributed to overcrowding and lack of facilities and resources. And we need to look after our people, especially with the distances they have to travel into Letterkenny and trying to access an ambulance.
Okay, thanks for your time this morning. I do appreciate it. And did you say, has a group been established now, or is it to be established? Sorry.
We are having a meeting tonight, this Monday night, tonight, for the core committee, who are the original founding committee. And what we're going to do is we're going to put all these names and numbers here, all on the sheet here, and text them and give them a date for next week when we're going to call into one of the hotels centrally. And we'll have a meeting to invite everybody back in. If you didn't give me your number, some of them didn't put a number on it. I presume you didn't want to be on the committee. You were just giving support. But there's like 60 people have given numbers. There's nearly 200 names alone here.
Yep.
So the reality is, please listen. And if you're kind enough on Highland, I would ask you to announce that for us whenever we have the date arranged after tonight.
Yep, of course. All right. Thanks for your time. Take care of yourself.
Good morning. All
right, good morning to you too. That's Mary T. Sweeney there. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts to that number, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. All right, we're joined on the programme now by Garda Sergeant Paul Wallace, Divisional Crime Prevention Officer. Paul, thank you very much for joining us. Good morning to you.
Morning, Greg.
Right, a couple of things we want to talk about. Community engagement meetings, which were flagged last Tuesday, but we want to remind people of those. But also, obviously, as a Garda and as a rep for Garda, I want to just talk to you about a couple of instances. A man in his 30s arrested after a Garda patrol car was burnt out at a Garda station here in Donegal, Castlefin Garda station. That's an ongoing investigation, of course. And a man in his 30s arrested by Garda investigating the assault, a serious assault of a member of An Garda Síochána on Saturday. He has been charged and is due before the courts today. This is off the back of a number of various instances between physical assaults, Garda car rammings. Are we more aware of these things now, Paul, or do some people now have no respect for the Garda, or think they're a fair target, or don't worry about the consequences of assaulting a Garda? What's your understanding of it from the inside, I suppose?
Yeah, I think there's been quite a societal change in recent times, and I suppose communications and media and all that are more accessible now, so we hear stories quicker. But like, we've been calling for this for some time. We've been calling for mandatory sentences for people who assault members of the guards, and you know, other frontline services as well, and that includes, you know, fire fighters, ambulance people, and nurses right across the board, because they are all can be victims of assault. But increasingly, members of the guards lately have you know, the evidence is there. I know the Taoiseach has called for that he's open to looking at a work or a task force, but the evidence is all around him. We hear about it every week, and the guards is no longer becoming an attractive job for a lot of young people, and that's borne out by the people going into the Garda College, and they can put whatever spin they like on it. People are being turned off by these attacks, and you can't have, there's plenty of legislation there. What we need is tougher sentences or mandatory sentences.
So like, what does mandatory sentences look like? Give us a, so does that mean, in other words, if I assaulted you, it would be the same as whether you were a guard or not a guard, and I could be sentenced up to 5 years, but I might get 2 years. But does a mandatory sentence look like, for assaulting you as a guard, I'd get 5 years, and I turned up into court, and if that was proven, then I'd get 5 years? Now, I'm just picking numbers out of my head here, but when we talk about mandatory sentencing, that's what we're talking about, that an assault of a Garda or someone else in the emergency services, if proven, there would be a minimum sentence guaranteed.
Yeah, exactly. I've been a member of the Guards, as you know, it's the Non-Fatal Offences Act is the legislation in relation to it. The legislation has been tried and tested and is robust, but there has to be some aspect of it that, and in other jurisdictions, if you assault a member of emergency service or a police officer, there's a different penalty there, and that's all we're looking for. It's not a reinvention of the wheel. What seems to happen a lot, and we have all that around the body cams, which I'll speak about in a minute. But you know, we have to have safety on the job. There's health and safety issues here, and you know, we have to seek public condemnation really for this. You know, people have to say this isn't good enough. We can't have guards, people who assault guards, going into courts and various adjournments and all that, and then getting away because there's no deterrent there. There has to be some level of a deterrent, and we can't have the people who are enforcing the law becoming victims themselves.
Do you think
what's happening now is guards are starting to kind of stand back?
Yeah.
Because They, you know, you see what happened there at the weekend in Dublin, and that's just savagery. There's no other word for
that. Do you think that maybe there's been a number of instances, but let's say, for instance, during COVID, where Gardaí were asked to police people effectively to stay in their homes, or the wearing of masks, or whether or not they went into a shop or not with a mask, and then the sort of online conversation about sort of the Gardaí doing the government's dirty work or whatever. Do you think things like that have chipped away at the sort of public attitude towards the Gardaí, respect to the Gardaí, that enough people are critical that it kind of changes a mindset? I'm not saying it should ever lead to anyone ever being injured, of course not, but you just see now, you know, interactions between members of the public and the Gardaí, and there's no respect there in a lot of the cases. Could that be part of it? Could that be adding to it, that then someone in a fit of rage or whatever sees the Gardaí as fair game?
Well, I think the policing of the COVID pandemic, I think our people went out and did it well. I think they did it very sensitively. It was health legislation that they were enforcing, and I don't think there was a sledgehammer to crack a nut approach. And, you know, a lot of older people were glad that the guards were calling around them and all that. But, you know, this has been around for a long time prior to COVID. And we've had, you know, a lot of talking and mealy-mouth talking about body cams and all that. And you would think that it was some new technology. That's the way we seem to be in this country at government level, and even at Garda management level. Like, they have to look out for us because we're the protectors. Who protects the protector? So, like, there's talk around body cams, and we've had so much talk about it with the new minister coming in now, Simon Harris, saying, oh yeah, I'll expedite that. But we need action, not words. Body cams have been around in other jurisdictions. If you go on holidays, if you even cross the border into Strabane, you'll see the police, the PSNI, walking around there with body cams. So this isn't new technology. It's not reinventing the wheel. It's a similar thing. You walk into any shop, you're under CCTV coverage. There's a sign there, and it's up to yourself whether you want to go in or not. Town centres, all of that. But the body cam would serve to serve to protect or offer a level of protection to our members, but also to members of the public, and also as an impartial, independent record of what actually happened. So, like, any incident that guards go now, and I hear it from the younger guards, the phones are out straight away, they're being recorded, there's bad manners, and then it keeps ratcheting up, and you see it on social media all the time. So, like, the body cam thing could be introduced within certainly 3 months. You know, it's not, they're talking about redrafting of legislation and all that. Yeah, that can be done. But it's in other jurisdictions. It's right across Scotland, England, Wales, Europe, America.
There's interesting reports
and
on that,
across the border
though.
From us.
There is interesting reports on that, though, in terms of, you know, what it actually does to protect the police that's actually wearing them. There's mixed evidence on that, seemingly. But look at, you know what you and your members would favour, and that's your perfectly entitled to make that call, of course. In terms of recruitment, you know, whatever about a decision a younger person might make to join the force, I just wonder if the people with influence in their lives are saying, it's not worth it, son, or it's not worth it, daughter.
I would think you're right there. I would think that that's what's happening. We were promised 800 guards this year. They got somewhere around between 120 and 200. They basically just can't get them in there. And that's for a myriad of reasons. The pay is certainly one, and the pension, there's a crazy scenario there around the pension situation, and we're talking to them about that. But the openness or putting yourself into the lion's mouth in relation to attacks and that, certainly wider family members are probably saying, and not, you know, even over the weekend, a number of people said to me, I would not encourage anybody to join the Guards. The Guards isn't what it's not what it used to be. And the need to, there's such a level of oversight now. There's such a little level of protection. You're guilty unto proved innocent. We have people under inquiry and under investigation for 2, 3, 4, and 5 years. And, you know, we have a myriad of oversight now. You would wonder who's watching the watchers. There's so many of them there. And really, at the end of the day, what tangible evidence have we seen that all this level of oversight has changed all that much? It certainly hasn't helped our career prospects, or you can see it now, where one time the Guards was a highly sought after job. It was a good, secure and pensionable job and all of that. And there certainly wasn't the level of aggression and violence out there. But if there's aggression and violence out there and we have a change in society, we need to be given the tools. We need to be given the protections to protect us.
Because I think
we're the thin blue line. And when it comes down to when push comes to shove, people are glad to see Guards turn up at the scene of an accident or a scene of a row or domestic violence or whatever. And, you know, you see the savage increase in domestic violence cases. And that can be one of the most dangerous calls that a young Guard will go to. And, you know, we have to have those protections there, Greg.
Yeah, and I just wonder, I would fear that if something is not done now, what kind of cases and instances we're going to be talking about. It's always been a dangerous job. Every day you don't know what's coming. And of course, we've lost members of the force in very tragic circumstances here in Donegal. They're still very to the front of our memories. I just wonder where it's actually going. If we stand still, do you know what I mean? What's going to become the norm almost, like, and it would never be the norm, don't get me wrong, but I just wonder as we change as a nation, you know, in terms of what Gardaí are going to be, in terms of serious injury or death, I can just sense that that's going to get more regular.
Yeah, well, as you said, we've had evidence here in Donegal where Guards have tragically lost their lives. We also had Guards who've been had life-changing injuries as well. And the danger, as you quite rightly say there, is that this behaviour becomes normalised and, you know, there's a public acceptance there. So I think the time has come when over the weekend, when you look at, if you even look over the news stories over the weekend, the level of violence and all of that, and that's the backdrop to everyone. We're the people that are asked to go in there. Remember, we are unarmed to go in with an ass baton. That's that pepper spray. There's no, we have no tasers. We have none of them, all them things that other jurisdictions have. Policing by its nature is a dangerous job, and it can change not even from day to day, but from hour to hour, from minute to minute, as we saw in Donegal with Chrysler. You know, a lot of our people are going around doing their normal job, no more than any of the other emergency services. Mm-hmm. And the next thing, you're catapulted into the world screen.
Well, look at all of these conversations happening right across the world now. It's an interesting thing going on in America. They've got all the things that you talk of, but you have constitution auditors that are engaging with police and videoing it. And you know, even with all the equipment that you have, their lives are being made quite difficult on an everyday basis. So it's not just here, it's right around the world. We're still in the company here of Garda Sergeant Paul Wallace, the Divisional Crime Prevention Officer. We're going to focus now on some community engagement meetings. On Monday the 23rd, tonight at 7:30 p.m. in the Clifford Clonlay Resource Centre. Wednesday the 25th, the Finn Valley Centre, Stranorlar at 10 a.m. Monday, the Station House Hotel, that's next to Monday, Letterkenny, at 7 p.m. Tonight's meeting, by the way, 7:30 p.m. So the function of these meetings, Paul?
Yeah, the function of these meetings, as we know, we've had changes. We have the new policing model coming in, the operating model, as they call it. And we had the retirement of our Chief Superintendent, Terry McGinn, and she has been replaced in type as such by Chief Superintendent Aidan Glacken, who will now cover Donegal Division and Sligo Leitrim. So that's a change. Basically, I suppose, the mission statement for the Guards is keeping people safe. And I suppose when we think about what we were talking about before the break, it becomes more important. But they're looking at this new type of policing, which has 5 strategic pillars, which is the community, to strengthen links with the community, and then tackling crime and preventative policing, which is anticipating and addressing crime and looking at crime trends and a lot of that. victims and the vulnerable, reducing harm by promoting dignity and human rights, protecting the security of the state, and sustainable change and innovation, inspiring and sustaining culture of community continuous improvement. That's what the blurb says, as such.
You'll try and be convincing us that this is the future. Are you convinced?
I don't know. You have five pillars there. You have the crime, the victims, the change and all that. I suppose the big word in it is change and how change is going to work. I suppose people don't like change. We have a difficulty around it in relation to, and the Commissioner was up last week meeting the JPC in Lifford and County Buildings. Donegal is different. The slogan is up here, we're different. It's different from us. And you only have to look at Chrysler, where all the emergency services seamlessly work together, north and south. And it was great to see the emergency services and the vehicles there from with their northern registrations and the fire service and all of that. There was nobody to come to help the guards. So we've been, impressing upon the commissioner from the representative body side and all that it needs to be looked at differently. Mm. How it'll shape up and how it'll shape, it's hard to know. I suppose the whole thing of districts where you had a superintendent in Buncrana, one in Letterkenny, Ballyshannon and Milford, that will change. Their portfolio will be around them areas, their community, crime, the victims and security of the state. So look, it's a big change. Inspector Paul Geller is in charge of that. He would probably know a lot more about it in depth than I do.
I think what the public want to know is how things will improve with our calls being dealt with by civilians in Galway, the force here being led primarily from Sligo. People want to know from that position, and there's much more to it, how do we feel safer? How is the county policed better? And I think that's what really us as the public really want to know. Do you know what I mean? It's up to you guys, I suppose, within to sort of, figure out what's happening structurally. But really what we're interested in is, will we be safer? You know, will the person we're reporting a problem with have enough of an understanding to get the adequate response to that place at the right time? Do you know what I mean? I suppose as service users, that's the area really we're worried about. And I suppose it's communicating how that's delivered to us, that how all these changes mean that we are better protected and served.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose at the end of the day, the numbers that we have we would see that we will need an increase in numbers to deliver the objectives that the commissioner wants. We see the big issues always in Donegal around transport, and that's been impressed upon him. The people will be still there. I suppose it's just the management structure and the way we do the business will change, and there'll probably be a move to online reporting and stuff like that there. And as you talk about the centre in Galway, I've been in that centre. It's a large room, and there's call takers there for every division. And we actually have some of the people who were in Letterkenny working down there now. So I know people have a worry about that. And I suppose, we change for where on appeals we would see your local Garda station, which I always had a sort of a problem with for years, where we would encourage people to contact their local district headquarters, like for West Donegal to contact Milford. And then people would say, well, I don't want the guards to come from Milford. I don't want the Milford guards. I want my local guards. But it's just getting that message out that they're only taking the call.
Yeah.
They know who's working. They'll send it out. There are people there. But we see and one time guards worked in sub-districts. Now they have a kind of a pan-district role in that you could have the guards in Dunloe going as far as Falcarra, answering a call and that sort of thing. And I think you see that across the services, no more than whether it's the ambulance or anything else.
Well, we have to, exactly, because it does work well with the fire service, for example, as well. But we'll have to wait and see how that goes. We're in a pilot, and I presume hopefully the outcomes of that pilot will be made public. So those are the type of conversations that we'd be had. Obviously, if people have any advice they want in terms of crime prevention, the correct door locks to be using, where to put lights around the house, you know, how to prevent your oil being stolen, that kind of stuff, and whatever else people can come up with, they can get answers to those questions. And of course, too, just to feed back in as it relates to how people feel policing is at the moment or where it's going, because, you know, you're interested in people's views on that stuff as well.
That's a very good, that's kind of the reason or the genesis for these meetings, that people would come in and ask the questions and ask the hard questions if there's something they have a concern about, and that'll be collated and taken back, because we do have a concern around Donegal that we have no adjoining district down the country. They can get resources in. If you're in Tipperary, you can get them in from Leash, Offaly, Waterford, Wexford, that sort of thing. While up here, we are standalone, and we just have a corridor through, and our neighbour is the Atlantic and another police and jurisdiction. So it is different here. So I think they're going to have to look at the model and ensure that, you know, that all these conversations we had before about lack of numbers, and, you know, we talked about lack of people going in, and that's where it's important, where government and Garda management have to make sure that people who are going into the guards as young people are looked after and that they don't become the victims. Mm. On the other side, the people who need service delivery, they need to articulate what they need and what assurances and all that that they have. I will be talking, as you say, we have, as you know, an upsurge in burglaries and that sort of crime and online stuff. We're going to have somebody there talking about online. I'll be talking about the residential and home security, the alarms and all of that. So hopefully people will come along. If they have an interest in policing in their area, they should. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're starting along that border corridor from Balbafay and Lifford and back towards Letterkenny.
All right, just to remind you, tonight at 7:30 p.m. in the Lifford Clonlea Resource Centre. Wednesday, Finn Valley Centre, Stranola at 10 a.m. That's a daytime one for those that might suit better. And next Monday, the Station House, Letterkenny at 7 p.m. Garda Sergeant Paul Wallace, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
Take care of yourself. All right, really appreciate it. Okay, 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts to that number. I'll be getting to some of the comments and stuff you've been sending in already after we take a break for the news and the obituary notices.